And next up on Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadside's May 2nd, 2019 show. This one's going to be largely taken up with the aftermath of the court last Monday and the ongoing attack on the Ross camp that will culminate tomorrow at 10 o'clock, or at least that's when the deadline is. Police have a nasty habit of threatening to come and then coming a bit later after all the activists and the public have dispersed, those who might want to witness or even join those being forcibly destroying, well, their homes being forcibly destroyed, their tents and their property. Or let's put it this way, they're being forced to move, but they can't carry their stuff, and there isn't enough city-funded storage to go to take it, so they're stuck without any place to any way to move it. And they're also in a situation, for many of them, with no place to move it to. So that's going to be happening tomorrow, sometime at or after 10 o'clock in the morning, unless the police come early, which is always a possibility as well, since the restraining order has been lifted. And the city manager has shown a willingness to sort of make decrees as to what should be done and do it as he sees fit. Although the city council has voted the standard operating procedure camp abatement processes that the city is supposedly committed to using, which don't involve finding adequate shelter for people whose camps they are destroying. And suffer a little with the folks who are going to suffer more than you tomorrow morning.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Let's begin with the aftermath of the TRO dissolution, which happened on Monday in the court of Edward Davila over in San Jose. A flyer about it, which I distributed yesterday at the Ross Camp. Community salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders. This was at a time when there was some possibility that Ross Camp folks would be moving some of them, a small group of them perhaps, or maybe a larger group, to another campground quite publicly, although with a certain amount of suddenness, to set up a second campground and holding together as a group, some of them being the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, which goes on. Even though the temporary restraining order banning the city from killing the Ross Camp has been lifted, so the city can now move ahead to destroy the Ross Camp as it intends to do tomorrow at 10, there is still a lawsuit which is going to be going to court for damages, claiming civil rights violations and various kinds of injuries and compensation required for the injuries caused against folks who are being forced away from the Ross Camp. Judge Davila found, and I think wrongly found, and pretty evidently wrongly found, if the standard for immediate harm is no place to go and a threat for vulnerable women to be outside in a much less safe place than they are at the Ross Camp, particularly when the city is telling stories, as a story spinner Susie O'Hara has been doing for several years at City Council and being paid rather well to do that, that there actually is alternate shelter for the folks at the Ross Camp. There is some offered shelter for some of them, most notably and most notoriously, the Barbed Wire Boneyard 1220 River Street Campground, which has, I think it housed 60 tents or 50 tents last year when it was opened in order to clear another campground, the San Lorenzo Campground, which had, again, twice as many people. And it was the city's attempt to say, see, everything's okay. We're giving you shelter over here. Actually, it's kind of a bait and switch kind of deal where they weren't giving shelter. They were giving partial shelter to a fewer number of people. San Lorenzo Campground's shelter area or campground area 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, which was set up, happened after the city dispersed the survival sleepers at City Hall in 2017 under the very liberal Chief Andy Mills. And then Mills, who then claimed he wasn't going to be giving tickets under the sleeping ban, significantly increased with his new Parks and Rec Rangers squad, because they were now under his command. Tickets for being in a closed area, being in a park after dark, blocking the sidewalk, and illegal lodging. This ended the two-year-long Freedom Sleepers, which became the Survival Sleepers. And at City Hall, the protest that went on, initially on a weekly basis every Tuesday, and then on a nightly basis, when the shelter let out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, I should say the winter shelter, the Homeless Lack of Services Center wasn't involved in the 2016-2017 winter shelter. Folks then began moving to the post office area along the fence, which was put in to separate the august post office building from the dirty, filthy, nearby presence of the homeless folks. Around this time, there was a hepatitis A epidemic down in San Diego that prompted them to set up an actual large tent shelter for people. And also, Mills, noticing the police chief, noticing more and more people appearing at the downtown areas and visible places, and maybe trying to duplicate in some way what he had done up in Eureka, which is there under threat of a lawsuit, to set up a area where people could sleep. It was kind of like it was a parking lot or some such thing, in lieu of a camp, which there had been a lawsuit to stop him from depopulating that camp. The parking lot served for about 6 months, and then the folks who he had supposedly given this compassionate shelter to all somehow disappeared, and it's not really clear what happened to them. When I asked him questions about it subsequently, he had no clear answers. He then directed people to go to the San Lorenzo Benchlands. This was in the fall of 2017, and they went there. Well, many had already gone there anyway, so we're sleeping along the levee and in the benchlands, and set up their own campground. Parks and Rec stopped enforcing the being in a closed area stuff, the stuff that they then began increasingly to enforce some months later. And this campground lasted all winter. Then, in order to depopulate it and appear to be compassionate, the authorities under Susie O'Hara and like city bureaucrats moved, as I said, a smaller number of these folks to the River Street campground, the Boneyard Barbed Wire campground, which still has barbed wire around it, although there is one little bit of barbed wire that has been taken down. You can see it kind of been curled up, and maybe that's a sort of a precursor of the future. Maybe they intend to remove the barbed wire to make it at least look less like the concentration camp that many feel it is, the sort of open-air jail that many feel it is, given the very severe restrictions upon visitors, on walking in and out, and so forth. And actually, it'll be this time it'll be run much more repressively by the Salvation Army, which is going to be wanding you or searching you coming in and out, and has a much harsher set of rules. Or I think, I don't have the actual rules in front of me, but my understanding from talking to some activists who've read the rules and some who've been there, not the activists, but some of the individuals who've been at the previous Boneyard campground, the River Street campground as it's called, it's a step down or a little tighter around the neck and the genitalia than the previous campground. But after all, you can't be too careful with these dangerous homeless people. Playing from the history, and you know me about history. If you're a regular listener to my show or read my flyers, I tend to get lost often in the history. I find it an interesting, important, useful way of viewing the present from a historical perspective. So I'm going to generate lots of mists and opportunities for getting lost in the byways and the side tracks and the so forth. After O'Hara, the assistant city manager, and Tina Scholl, another assistant city manager, had continued to run their phony rap about there being adequate shelter, even though they were spending huge amounts of money on this River Street campground. I think it was $90,000 a month, though they dropped to $75,000. There were different estimates. That would be $2,000 per person per month, which could have been enough to put people up in rather much more comfortable indoor accommodations. But, you know, I mean, that would only encourage them, like ants, roaches, and other vermin, to come to Santa Cruz, according to, their pals on the Discus Sentinel's comment website or the Take Back Santa Cruz-ish type Facebook comments you can see if you don't look very far around on the internet. Promises, you got lots of promises about an interim transitional camping shelter or shelter area, which didn't appear in the summer of 2018. And so they extended this expensive campground, the River Street Campground, until August, and still didn't appear in spite of the many promises of O'Hara and Scholl. And so they extended it until until April of this year. But lo and behold, in October, they decided, no, we can't do that, so they cut it off and reduced the winter shelter from what it had been the year before, making shelter for less people. And people then began going to the Ross area, sometimes directed, actually on a number of occasions, by Andy Mills, the police chief. Again, understandably, police like to see homeless in one area concentrated. They prefer that than in the neighborhoods. They don't keep getting called, "There's a stranger in my neighborhood with a tent," you know, that sort of thing. As though that, you know, were the end of the world and indicate, you know, it's going to ruin the property values and terrorize the children and so forth. And there they were in the Ross camp and growing, and that went on for about 6 months. And so they suddenly decided, well, we got to get rid of these people. March 15th, out they should go. Well, they were nervous about a court decision that happened last September, the Boise versus Martin decision. And that decision had said something to the effect of, you know, you can't ticket those people for camping offenses unless you've got an actual place for them to go into. Now, attorney Anthony Prince says indoor shelter. Our city has said, no, you can have outdoor shelter too. But in fact, what the city Santa Cruz has always ended up doing is providing no shelter for the overwhelming majority of homeless people outside. Nonetheless, the Boise versus Martin decision has made many cities nervous, Santa Cruz among them. And Chief Mills has made it a point to keep saying, I'm not giving as many camping tickets as I used to. In fact, far less. And that's true. There are a few that are still being given, though. But what he is doing, and what his Parks and Rec Rangers are doing, or you could say Tony Elliott, the new Parks and Rec boss, as of about 6 months ago, is doing, as well as keeping the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms locked to those not in the programs, and City Hall bathrooms locked to people during the day, is they are giving more and more closed area citations, meaning if you fall asleep in a park after dark, that's a crime. If you're in a closed area of the Poganip, which is the whole Poganip at night, that's a crime. And they also can give you a stay-away order at the same time without even taking you to court under the novel Santa Cruz law passed by the reactionaries under previous mayor David Chirazes. It's true that some of these laws are being researched by, God help us, the Martin Bernal staff, which includes the same beloved Tina Scholl and Susie O'Hara. Oh, I'm not quite sure who's actually assigned to review them. I guess the city attorney's office is going to be looking into this too. 2 or 3 months ago, Drew Glover, one of the council members, made a successful motion that those matters, by a 4-3 vote of the city council, a whole series of ordinances would be looked at to see their impact on the homeless. One of them being the closed area ordinance that the Parks and Rec and the police department enforce so freely, so frequently, and so selectively against homeless people. But assuming it gets put on the agenda, as it should be, because it's being properly situated on the agenda 2 weeks before the next city council meeting, as is supposedly required by the, I don't know, whether it's unwritten tradition or latest edicts from Bernal and Watkins, he's our mayor, he's our city manager, or stuff I never knew about. I talked to Micah Posner, a former city council member, and he said it's always been an uncertain process of when the agenda is formulated. The agenda of a city council meeting is usually formulated, I had thought it was on the Wednesday before the Tuesday city council meeting. That was my understanding. Posner said, well, yeah, usually, but it can be done way before that. Usually that's about the last time. So I'm not sure that there's any written policy about this, but that has been used as an excuse to keep Glover's proposals, among them most notoriously transitional encampments, and the idea that there can be private agencies, private nonprofits, if you will, that, like Food Not Bombs, like the Association of Faith Communities, like Brent Adams Sanctuary Village or Warming Center, that can actually set up transitional campgrounds of different kinds without elaborately having to go through the city council, which can be a deadly and probably will be deadly once the council, well, it probably is deadly now, given it's a little unclear how deadly it is now. Because we have the swing vote is, of course, Justin Cummings, who we had thought was elected to further rent control and restore homeless rights and keep police spending within bounds and stop racial profiling. Both he and Glover, of course, are people of color, as the fashionable phrase has it. Black, as we used to say. Has turned tail on a number of very important issues like rent control and the Ross Camp, which affects thousands of people in the city, at least the rent control situation, and just eviction protection. The rent freeze issue, which was came up in January, was initially voted, and then was when Cummings ran the other way, or ducked the other way, or moved the other way, it was deep sixed, and now we have the increasingly repressive situation of the ongoing landlord profiteering that's driving away lower-income people and working people from the city. I don't have any stats on that, but I believe that is the case. In any case, coming up in 2 weeks at the next city council meeting, which is not going to be the 7th, as some may think, 7th of May, next Tuesday. It's going to be the Tuesday after next, the 14th, because the month of April, I think it had five Tuesdays, and the city council meets on the second and fourth Tuesday, so the fifth Tuesday didn't count, and we go back into the second and fourth Tuesdays of May, which are the 14th and the 28th. All you knuckleheads who like to go to city council meetings, or go to them whether you like to or not, that's one of the things I tend to do, at least in part, and read my little two-minute speech, giving it out to people in the aisles, and making a few audio recordings, which I then play on this program. This is about the court case that came up. I know, that was about 20 minutes ago. I began this very wandering monologue history, and maybe it's given you a sense of what's happened in the last year or two around this issue. But the Ross Camp plaintiffs have been suing the city to stop them from closing the Ross Camp, and then if they do, getting damages from them for this unconstitutional closure, forcing people into unsafe situations and violating the Ninth Circuit Court's Boise versus Martin decision, something which, unfortunately, federal judge Edward Davila did not agree with, at least as far as maintaining the TRO, although he will be the judge. Actually, he won't be the judge who oversees the trial as far as being the decider of fact. A judge can be both the decider of law and the decider of fact. That is to say, you just have a trial before a judge with no jury. But instead, Anthony Prince has declared he will be taking this case before a jury. so that it's that matter, at least the guilty or not guilty verdict, and the city is the one that will be in the docket, will be taken out of the hands of Judge Davila. Anyway, what I wrote about this whole thing, and I haven't yet really talked about the Monday case, and I don't know how much I'm going to do it today. I've got a lot of Roskamp stuff to play, and I'd rather do that than go through these arcane legal hoops that are sort of fun for middle-class people to look at and wonder at and second-guess and argue about. And I'm one of those middle-class people, by the way, however occasionally rough or growly my rhetoric may sound. It's the people in the camp and what's going on out there, people who are about to be dispersed tomorrow, that are really the issue. And they're the issue in the court case, too. Anyway, the flyer I wrote reads, "Community salutes the Roskamp Rough Riders." And I will read that after this brief musical break.
So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, the special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. And I will now have a few questions.
Hi. Hello. Over here. Thank you for taking our questions, Attorney General Barr. Roseanne, many are concerned that you have whitewashed this report in an effort to protect the president. Your response?
The very prosecutorial function and all our powers as prosecutors, including
the power to convene grand juries.
Little clown, crying no collusion. We've been tricked, and it's gone too far. He ain't down with the Constitution. That's why Trump handpicked.
Bill Barr, over here. Bill Barr.
Bill Barr.
Bill Barr.
Hey, Bill.
Roseanne.
Why does he just keep saying no obstruction? He must be under Donald's spell. He's a shiesty hypocrite. You might say he's full of shit, just like someone else I know. Good morning, Kel.
First of all, the investigation by Mr. Mueller...
Okay, I just said good morning.
...failed to conclude that the president has committed a crime.
Wow, that's great. Your husband hates you. Gotta go. Now it's no wonder Donald crapped his diaper the day he heard they hired Bob. Since he really did obstruct, he said, oh my God, I'm fucked. Then he called Bill Barr and offered him the job. What they declare, he's just repeating, like in that phony summary.
He should play fair, but he's misleading.
He's shadier than Sarah Huckabee.
Oh, hey girl, I didn't see you there.
The big question here was whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. They didn't.
This sure is a great read, though. Far off places, Russian hackers, magic spells, all Manafort. Why, look, it even questions your own credibility, stating you lied multiple times to the American public about the firing of James Comey.
Actually, if you look at what I said the slip of the tongue was in using the word countless.
Okay.
But there were a number of FBI...
Look, there goes Sarah popping off like always, the apple of her daddy's eye, with a manner that's high-strung and a slight slip of the tongue, which is huck-a-speak for calculated lies. Damn, this is so redacted. What's in volume H that I can't see? Here's where he gets distracted by those Russian hookers, but it's not till volume P.
Mr. Giugniazzi, Republicans and Democrats alike are appalled that the president would take help of any kind from a hostile foreign source.
Stop the bull. Stop this pious act that you weren't trying to dig up dirt on people, putting dirt out on people.
Who, me?
There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
It depends on where it came from.
It came from Russians.
Does the information turn out to be false?
I don't know. I don't work here.
Oh, yes, you do.
Excuse me, I have to do a costume change.
There's Jerry Nadler with a fat subpoena for White House counsel Don McGahn.
Little Junior pushed his luck. Daddy's thankful he's a schmuck. And his dumbass foiled their own master plan.
Oh, look, you guys, Nancy Pelosi. Will she impeach no matter what? they call his lies. He calls them nosy. And Jared Kushner's heads up his own butt.
Bill Barr, he lies.
So many indiscretions.
Drink.
Roseanne,
page 12.
Will Mueller talk?
Hey, Mayor Pete, I think you're cute.
No way.
Nice. Mitch, please.
I missed Jeff Sessions. Oh, I thought this chapter would be funnier.
Can't we at least impeach Melania?
Now it's no wonder that the Dems are fuming. They say his actions are bizarre. Look at all the tales he spun for an audience of one.
And he really is incredible.
For real though, he's incredible.
No, really, he's not credible.
So that's the bottom line.
Okay.
And that's the latest Randy Rainbow parody song, or song parody, Barr, about, of course, Attorney General William Barr, who is accused of soft peddling and misrepresenting the Mueller report. Of course, my reaction to all this stuff is... Further, if you stick to the real issues, which have to do with massive military and police establishment in the country that eats up massive amounts of money and civil liberties and threatens to not just destroy the peace of the world, it has destroyed the peace of the world. I think we have more armaments or more expenditures on armaments and military than what the next nine countries in the world. Attempting to portray Russia as this great menace, which has an economy some have described the size of Italy, is based upon the need for military and military contractors to have an enemy and have politicians to have an enemy and there to be an ongoing war, because the war against terror is sort of become old hat. I mean, it's been, a lot of money was expended on it. A lot of bombings have happened. Civilians have been murdered all over the world by U.S. And, of course, don't forget those wonderful jihadis. No question about that. But Democrats and Republicans are actually spending much time or energy seriously addressing or opposing those issues. And we've all seen this for decades. Even the Green New Deal and the focus on the climate catastrophe doesn't really involve massively dismantling the military. And even the great sheepdog Bernie Sanders, whose job it seems to be is to steer everybody back into the Democratic Party with liberal and leftist talk, and then I'll support Hillary or whoever the Hillary clone, Biden, whoever it's going to be, is in 2020. And you can see this kind of mentality even at a local level around homeless folks. There are three council members who are better on homeless issues than other council members have been for the last decade or so. And some of them, one of them anyway, is pretty outspoken. That's Drew Glover. But even he, for example, was afraid to put on the agenda to ask there be a vote on agendizing items that Mayor Watkins has specifically and repeatedly refused to put on the agenda, putting on instead these phony pseudo-housing, pseudo-homeless aid items cooked up by O'Hara and Scholl, and that really involve the dispersal and destruction of existing homeless, I don't want to say housing, but tents and camps, which you might say, well, people shouldn't have to live like that. And you're right, they shouldn't. But the fact is, if that's the only option they have, then to destroy it without providing other options is a form of true hypocrisy, if you're talking about cruel hypocrisy, too, if you're talking about addressing those issues in a humanitarian way. It's like the humanitarian interventions in Libya and Syria that have killed and created millions of refugees. They've created millions of refugees. They've killed hundreds of thousands. of people, and they've called killed tens of thousands of civilians. My figures may be a little shaky, but I don't think they're that far off. Anyway, to the flyer that I said I would read to you, and I will. Again, as I said, I put it out yesterday. And it reads, Community salutes the Ross Camp Rough Riders. In the face of personal attacks by City Hatchet Man, that's City Attorney, Reed Glagley, and Assistant City Manager Story Spinner Susie O'Hara, Ross Camp defenders fought back Monday in federal court. They made a strong record for a likely appeal of a biased and baseless decision by federal judge Edward Davila. The TRO held the police at bay for a week. That's the temporary restraining order. But the camp now faces a 9 a.m., and actually apparently it's a 10 a.m., my apologies, Friday eviction date. California Homeless Union attorney and activist Anthony Prince, that's the attorney who argued for the plaintiffs. He actually came in originally as sort of the general counsel for the California Homeless Union with the theory that homeless plaintiffs arguing their own case would be given more leeway by the judge, but he ended up essentially doing all the arguing. Fought to retain in place the temporary restraining order that protected Ross Camp from demolition by City Manager Martine Burnell's bulldozer of bullshit, as I see it. The standards to keep the TRO in place were imminent and irredeemable harm, favorable balance of equities, and likelihood of success. Favorable balance of equities means if you consider the harm on one side versus the harm on the other, then you weigh it so that there's the folks who are wanting to keep the camp open have to prove it in order to stop the city from dissolving the temporary restraining order and doing what they want. Davila ran roughshod over the Ross residents, that's the judge, by ignoring the elephant in the room, the fact that the city, by its own testimony, had no adequate and accessible alternate shelter for all of those in the camp. Anthony Prince, the attorney for the plaintiffs, showed a variety of photos taken after last Sunday's camp cleanup. He tellingly confronted Fire Chief Haddock, I don't want to accuse him of being a fishy guy, dismissing one after another of the hazards that Haddock had sworn required eliminating the camp. Witnesses testify that Haddock and O'Hara had agreed to provide assistance for earlier cleanups that never materialized. Not the cleanups, but the assistance. O'Hara's claim of adequate and accessible shelter for displaced residents was contradicted by the facts out of her own mouth. She claimed the Paul Lee Loft had only one vacancy, the Rebelli Family Shelter none, the VFW Winter Sanctuary 25 out of a capacity of 60, the Laurel Street Shelter 5, and the South County Salvation Army 5. Now, if we add all those up, that's 25, 30, 35, 36. And how many people are out at Ross? Hundreds. What are you talking about, Susie? Is my response. Now, when I talked to Susie today out at Ross, I was out there today doing some tabling, getting people to sign up so that wherever they happen to be driven to tomorrow, they might, some of them, be able to get back in touch. And if we go to court again, get some kind of compensation, it'll be years down the road, of course, for their losses at this camp because we can't possibly carry their stuff elsewhere. And given the lack of shelter or an elsewhere to go to. And their camp is being destroyed tomorrow at 10 a.m. or soon thereafter. But what O'Hara told me today was suddenly there is a greater number of vacancies because in the last few months, less and less people have been using the winter shelter at the VFW Winter Sanctuary, which would be on 7th Avenue, and the Laurel Street Shelter, which opened up some months later, a few months ago, I guess. I'm able to find the handout that Susie O'Hara was giving out at a table up at the Ross Camp removal area earlier today, but she did tell me that the number of spaces, I believe, was like 30 or 40 in both Laurel and the VFW place. And I could be wrong on one of those, but that's significantly much more than her testimony of Monday in court 3 days ago. So she is contradicting herself, which was also the case in, she was contradicted in court, at least by the testimony of a guy named Serge, who has been studying the shelter situation. I think he works at the, either he works for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or he works in conjunction with different service providers. I'm a little unclear on that. He gave a very specific itemizing of the very limited shelter that was available. And it stood in rather sharp contrast to Susie O'Hara's claims. But the judge preferred to believe her. My flyer continues, Ross Camp is estimated to have 150 to 300 residents. The Benchlands campground, which is now closed, was slated to close May 1st. The 1220 River Street campground had 60 tent spaces before, that is to say last year. Now O'Hara claims there are 80. I drove by there this morning and saw, I think it was somewhere less than 10 small one-person tents set up, the same kind of tents which if you walked by the Benchlands in the last week you would have seen in the Benchlands area right below the courthouse.